the 29th of July. Up and with Sir William Batten to St. James's to Sir William Coventry's chamber, where, among other things, he came to me and told me that he had received my yesterday's letters, and that we concurred very well in our notions, and that as to my place, which I had offered to resign of the victualling, he had drawn up a letter at the same time, for the Duke of York signing for the like places in general raised during this war, and that he had done me right to the Duke of York, to let him know that I had of my own accord offered to resign mine. The letter doth bid us to do all things, particularizing several, for the laying up of the ships and easing the King of charge, so that the war is now professedly over. By and by, up to the Duke of York's chamber, and there all the talk was about Jordan's coming with so much indiscretion, with his 4 little frigates and 16 fireships from Harwich, to annoy the enemy. His failures were of several sorts, I know not which the truest, that he came with so strong a gale of wind that his grapplings would not hold, that he did come by their lee, whereas if he had come thwart their hawse, they would have held, that they did not stop a tide, and came up with a windward tide, and then they would not have come so fast. Now there happened to be Captain Jennifer by, who commanded the Lily in this business, and thus says, that finding the Dutch not so many as they expected, they did not know but that there were more of them above, and so were not so earnest to the setting upon these. That they did do what they could to make the fireships fall in among the enemy, and for their lives, Sir Joseph Jordan nor others could by shooting several times at them make them go in. And it seems they were commanded by some idle fellows, such as they could of a sudden gather up at Harwich, which is a sad consideration, that at such a time as this, where the saving the reputation of the whole nation lay at stake, and after so long a war, the king had not credit to gather a few able men to command these vessels. He says that if they had come up slower, the enemy would, with their boats and their great sloops, which they have to row with a great many men, they would, and did come and cut up several of our fireships, and would certainly have taken most of them, for they do come with a great provision of these boats on purpose, and to save their men, which is bravely done of them, though they did on this very occasion show great fear, as they say, by some men leaping overboard out of a great ship, as these were all of them of 60 and 70 guns apiece, which one of our fireships laid on board, though the fire did not take. But yet it is brave to see what care they do take to encourage their men to provide great stores of boats to save them, while we have not credit to find one boat for a ship. And further, he told us that this new way used by Dean, and this Sir William Coventry observed several times, of preparing of fireships, doth not do the work, for the fire, not being strong and quick enough to flame up, so as to take the rigging and sails, lies smothering a great while, half an hour before it flames, in which time they can get her off safely, though which is uncertain, and did fail in one or two this bout, it doth serve to burn our own ships. But what a shame it is, to consider how 2 of our ship's companies did desert their ships for fear of being taken by their boats, our little frigates being forced to leave them, being chased by their greater. And 1 more company did set their ship on fire and leave her, which afterward a Faversham fisherman came up to, and put out the fire and carried safe into Faversham, where she now is, which was observed by the Duke of York, and all the company with him, that it was only want of courage and a general dismay and abjectness of spirit upon all our men. And others did observe our ill management and God Almighty's curse upon all that we have in hand, for never such an opportunity was of destroying so many good ships of theirs as we now had. But to see how negligent we were in this business, that our fleet of Jordan should not have any notice where Sprague was, nor Sprague of Jordan's, so as to be able to meet and join in the business and help one another. But Jordan, when he saw Sprague's fleet above, did think them to be another part of the enemy's fleet, while on the other side, notwithstanding our people at court made such a secret of Jordan's design, that nobody must know it, and even this office itself must not know it, nor for my part I did not, though Sir William Batten says by others' discourse to him he had heard something of it, yet De Ruyter, or he that commanded this fleet, had notice of it, and told it to a fisherman of ours that he took and released on Thursday last, which was the day before our fleet came to him. But then, that seems most to our disgrace, and which the Duke of York did take special and vehement notice of, is that when the Dutch saw so many fireships provided for them, themselves lying, I think, about the Nore, they did, with all their great ships, with a northeast wind, as I take they said, but whatever it was a wind that we should not have done it with, turned down to the middle ground, which the Duke of York observed never was nor would have been undertaken by ourselves, and whereas some of the company answered it was their great fear, not their choice, that made them do it, the Duke of York answered that it was, it may be, their fear and wisdom that made them do it. But yet their fear did not make them mistake, as we should have done, when we have had no fear upon us and have run our ships on ground. And this brought it into my mind that they managed their retreat down this difficult passage, with all their fear, better than we could do ours in the main sea, when the Duke of Albemarle ran away from the Dutch, when the Prince was lost, and the Royal Charles, and the other great ships come on ground upon the Galloper. Thus, in all things, in wisdom, courage, force, knowledge of our own streams, and success, the Dutch have the best of us, and do end the war with victory on their side. The Duke of York being ready, we into his closet, but being in haste to go to the Parliament House, could not stay, so we parted, and to Westminster Hall, where the hall full of people to see the issue of the day, the King being to come to speak to the House today. One thing extraordinary was this day, a man, a Quaker, came naked through the hall, only very civilly tied about the privities to avoid scandal, and with a chafing dish of fire and brimstone burning upon his head, did pass through the hall crying, "Repent! Repent!" I, up to the painted chamber, thinking to have got in to have heard the King's speech, but upon second thoughts did not think it would be worth the crowd, and so went down again into the hall, and there walked with several, among others, my Lord Rutherford, who is come out of Scotland, and I hope I may get some advantage by it in reference to the business of the interest of the great sum of money I paid him long since without interest. But I did not now move him in it, but presently comes down the House of Commons, the King having made them a very short and no pleasing speech to them at all, not at all giving them thanks for their readiness to come up to town at this busy time, but told them that he did think he should have had occasion for them, but had none, and therefore did dismiss them to look after their own occasions till October, and that he did wonder any should offer to bring in a suspicion that he intended to rule by an army, or otherwise, than by the laws of the land, which he promised them he would not, and so bade them go home and settle the minds of the country in that particular, and only added that he hath made a peace which he did believe they would find reasonable and a good peace, but did give them none of the particulars thereof. Thus they are dismissed again to their general great distaste. I believe the greatest that ever Parliament was, to see themselves so fooled, and the nation in certain condition of ruin, while the King, they see, is only governed by his lust and women and rogues about him. The Speaker, they found, was kept from coming in the morning to the House on purpose, till after the King was come to the House of Lords, for fear they should be doing anything in the House of Commons to the further dissatisfaction of the King and his courtiers. They do all give up the kingdom for loss that I speak of, and do hear what the King says, how he and the Duke of York do what they can to get up an army, that they may need no more parliaments. And how my Lady Castlemaine hath, before the late breach between her and the King, said to the King that he must rule by an army, or all would be lost, and that Bab May hath given the like advice to the King to crush the English gentlemen, saying that £300 a year was enough for any man but them that lived at court. I am told that many petitions were provided for the Parliament, complaining of the wrongs they have received from the court, and courtiers in city and country, if the Parliament had but sat. And I do perceive they all do resolve to have a good account of the money spent, before ever they give a farthing more, and the whole kingdom is everywhere sensible of their being abused, insomuch that they force their Parliament men to come up to sit, and my cousin Roger told me that, but that was in mirth, he believed, if he had not come up he should have had his house burnt. The kingdom never in so troubled a condition in this world as now. nobody pleased with the peace, and yet nobody daring to wish for the continuance of the war, it being plain that nothing doth, nor can, thrive under us. Here I saw old good Mr. Vaughan and several of the great men of the Commons, and some of them, old men, that are come 200 mile and more to attend this session of Parliament, and been at great charge and disappointments in their other private business, and now all to no purpose, neither to serve their country, content themselves, nor receive any thanks from the King. It is verily expected by many of them that the King will continue the prorogation in October, so as, if it be possible, never to have a Parliament more. My Lord Bristol took his place in the House of Lords this day, but not in his robes, and when the King came in he withdrew, but my Lord of Buckingham was there as brisk as ever, and sat in his robes, which is a monstrous thing that a man proclaimed against, and put in the Tower and all, and released without any trial, and yet not restored to his places. But above all I saw my Lord Mordaunt as merry as the best, that it seems hath done such further indignities to Mr. Taylor since the last sitting of Parliament, as would hang if there were nothing else, would the King do what were fit for him. But nothing of that is now likely to be. After having spent an hour or two in the hall, my cousin Roger and I in Creed to the Old Exchange, where I find all the merchants sad at this peace and breaking up of the Parliament, as men despairing of any good to the nation, which is a grievous consideration. So home, and there cousin Roger and Creed to dinner with me, and very merry. But among other things they told me of the strange bold sermon of Dr. Creton yesterday before the King, how he preached against the sins of the court, and particularly against adultery, over and over instancing how for that single sin in David the whole nation was undone. And of our negligence in having our castles without ammunition and powder when the Dutch come upon us, and how we have no courage nowadays but let our ships be taken out of our harbour. Here Creed did tell us the story of the duel last night in Covent Garden between Sir Henry Bellasis and Tom Porter. It is worth remembering the silliness of the quarrel, and as a kind of emblem of the general complexion of this whole kingdom at present. They, too, it seems, dined yesterday at Sir Robert Carr's, where it seems people do drink high all that come. It happened that these two, the greatest friends in the world, were talking together, and Sir Henry Bellasis talked a little louder than ordinary to Thomas Porter, giving of him some advice. Some of the company standing by said, "What, are they quarrelling, that they talk so high?" Sir Henry Bellasis, hearing it, said, "No," says he, "I would have that you know I never quarrel, but I strike, and take that as a rule of mine." "How?" says Tom Porter. "Strike? I would I could see that man in England that durst give me a blow." With that Sir Henry Bellasis did give him a box of the ear, and so they were going to fight there, but were hindered, and by and by Tom Porter went out, and meeting Dryden the poet, told him of the business, and that he was resolved to fight Sir Henry Bellasis presently, for he knew if he did not they should be made friends tomorrow, and then the blow would rest upon him, which he would prevent, and desired Dryden to let him have his boy to bring him notice which way Sir Henry Bellasis goes. By and by he is informed that Sir Henry Bellasis's coach was coming, so Tom Porter went down out of the coffee-house, where he stayed for the tidings, and stopped the coach, and bade Sir Henry Bellasis come out. "Why," said Henry Bellasis, "you will not hurt me coming out, will you?" "No," says Tom Porter, so out he went, and both drew. And Henry Bellasis, having drawn and flung away his scabbard, Tom Porter asked him whether he was ready, the other answering he was. They fell to fight, some of their acquaintance by. They wounded one another, and Henry Bellasis so much that it is feared he will die. And finding himself sorely wounded, he called to Tom Porter and kissed him and bade him shift for himself. "For," says he, "Tom, thou hast hurt me, but I will make shift to stand upon my legs till thou mayst withdraw, and the world not take notice of you, for I should not have thee troubled for what thou hast done." And so, whether he did fly or no, I cannot tell, but Tom Porter showed Henry Bellasis that he was wounded too, and they were both ill, but Henry Bellasis to fear of life. And this is a fine example, and Henry Bellasis a Parliament man too, and both of them most extraordinary friends. Among other discourse, my cousin Roger told us as a thing certain that the Archbishop of Canterbury that now is doth keep a wench, and that he is as very a wencher as can be, and tells us it is a thing publicly known that Sir Charles Sedley hath got away one of the Archbishop's wenches from him, and the Archbishop sent to him to let him know that she was his kinswoman, and did wonder that he would offer any dishonour to one related to him, to which Sir Charles Sedley is said to answer, "A pox take his grace. Pray tell his grace that I believe he finds himself too old, and is afeard that I should outdo him among his girls and spoil his trade." But he makes no more of doubt to say that the Archbishop is a wencher, and known to be so, which is one of the most astonishing things that I have heard of, unless it be, what for certain he says is true, that my Lady Castlemaine hath made a bishop lately, namely, her uncle Dr. Glenham, who I think they say is Bishop of Carlisle, a drunken swearing rascal, and a scandal to the church, and doth now pretend to be Bishop of Lincoln in competition with Dr. Rainbow, who is reckoned as worthy a man as most is in the church for piety and learning, which are things so scandalous to consider, that no man can doubt, but we must be undone, that hears of them. After dinner comes Will Howe and a son of Mr. Paget's to see me, with whom I drank, but could not stay, and so by coach with Cousin Roger, who before his going did acquaint me in private, with an offer made of his marrying of Mistress Elizabeth Wiles, whom I know, a kinswoman of Mr. Honeywood's, an ugly old maid, but good housewife, and is said to have 2,500 pounds to her portion. But if I can find that she hath but 2,000 pounds, which he prays me to examine, he says he will have her, she being one he hath long known intimately, and a good housewife and discreet woman, though I am against it in my heart, she being not handsome at all, and it hath been the very bad fortune of the Pepyses that ever I knew, never to marry an handsome woman excepting Ned Pepys, and Creed set the former down at the Temple, resolving to go to Cambridge tomorrow, and Creed and I to Whitehall, to the Treasury Chamber, there to attend, but in vain. Only here, looking out of the window into the garden, I saw the King, whom I have not had any desire to see since the Dutch came upon the coast first to Sheerness. For shame that I should see him, or he me, methinks, after such a dishonour. Come upon the garden, with him two or three idle lords, and instantly after him in another walk my Lady Castlemaine, led by Bab May, at which I was surprised, having but newly heard the stories of the King's and her being parted for ever. So I took Mr. Povey, who was there, aside, and he told me all, how imperious this woman is, and hectors the King to whatever she will. It seems she is with child, and the King says he did not get it. With that she made a slighting puh with her mouth, and went out of the house, and never came in again till the King went to Sir Daniel Harvey's to pray her. And so she has come to-day, when one would think his mind should be full of some other cares, having but this morning broken up such a parliament, with so much discontent and so many wants upon him, and but yesterday heard such a sermon against adultery. But it seems she hath told the King that whoever did get it, he should own it. And the bottom of the quarrel is this: she is fallen in love with young Jermyn, who hath of late lain with her oftener than the King, and is now going to marry my Lady Falmouth. The King, he is mad at her entertaining Jermyn, and she is mad at Jermyn's going to marry from her, so they are all mad, and thus the kingdom is governed. And they say it is labouring to make breaches between the Duke of Richmond and his lady, that the King may get her to him. But he tells me for certain that nothing is more sure than that the King and Duke of York, and the Chancellor, are desirous and labouring all they can to get an army, whatever the King says to the Parliament, and he believes that they are at last resolved to stand and fall all three together. So that he says in terms that the match of the Duke of York with the Chancellor's daughter hath undone the nation. He tells me also that the King hath not greater enemies in the world than those of his own family, for there is not an officer in the house almost but curses him for letting them starve, and there is not a farthing of money to be raised for the buying them bread. Having done talking with him, I to Westminster Hall, and there talked and wandered up and down till the evening, to no purpose there, and to the Swan, and so till the evening, and so home, and there to walk in the garden with my wife, telling her of my losing 300 a year by my place that I am to part with, which doth a little trouble me, but we must live with somewhat more thrift, and so home to supper, and to play on the flageolet, which she doth do very prettily, and so to bed. Many guns were heard this afternoon, it seems, at Whitehall, and in the Temple Garden, very plain. But what it should be, nobody knows, unless the Dutch be driving our ships up the river. Tomorrow we shall know. The 30th of July. Up and to the office, where we sat busy all the morning, at noon home to dinner, where Daniel and his wife with us, come to see whether I could get him any employment. But I am so far from it that I have the trouble upon my mind how to dispose of Mr. Gibson, and one or two more I am concerned for in the victualling business, which are to be now discharged. After dinner by coach to Whitehall, calling on two or three tradesmen and paying their bills, and so to Whitehall to the Treasury Chamber, where I did speak with the Lords, and did my business about getting them to assent to 10% interest on the 11 months' tax, but find them mightily put to it for money. Here I do hear that there are three lords more to be added to them, my Lord Bridgewater, my Lord Anglesey, and my Lord Chamberlain. Having done my business, I to Creed's chamber, and thence out to Whitehall with him, in our way meeting with Mr. Cooling, my Lord Chamberlain's secretary, on horseback, who stopped to speak to us, and he proved very drunk, and did talk, and would have talked, all night with us, I not being able to break loose from him, he holding me so by the hand. But, Lord, to see his present humour, how he swears at every word, and talks of the King and my Lady Castlemaine in the plainest words in the world. And from him I gather that the story I learned yesterday is true, that the King hath declared that he did not get the child of which she is conceived at this time, he having not, as he says, lain with her this half year. But she told him, God damn me, but you shall own it. It seems he is jealous of Jermyn, and she loves him, so that the thoughts of his marrying of my Lady Falmouth puts her into fits of the mother, and he, it seems, hath lain with her from time to time continually, for a good while, and once, as this Cooling says, the King had like to have taken him a bed with her, but that he was fain to creep under the bed into her closet. He says that for a good while the King's greatest pleasure hath been with his fingers, being able to do no more. But it is a pretty thing, he told us, how the King, once speaking of the Duke of York's being mastered by his wife, said to some of the company by, that he would go no more abroad with this Tom Otter, meaning the Duke of York and his wife. Tom Killigrew, being by, answered, Sir, says he, pray, which is the best for a man to be, a Tom Otter to his wife or to his mistress? Meaning the King's being so to my Lady Castlemaine. Thus he went on, and speaking then of my Lord Sandwich, whom he professed to love exceedingly, says Cooling, I know not what, but he is a man, methinks, that I could love for himself, without other regards, and by your favour, says he. By God, there is nothing to be beloved, prop to say, but a cunt. And so he talked very lewdly, and then took notice of my kindness to him on shipboard 7 years ago, when the King was coming over, and how much he was obliged to me, but says, Pray look upon this acknowledgment of a kindness in me to be a miracle, for, says he, it is against the law at court for a man that borrows money of me, even to buy his place with, to own it the next Sunday. And then told us his horse was a bribe, and his boots a bribe, and told us he was made up of bribes, as a Oxford scholar is set out with other men's goods when he goes out of town, and that he makes every sort of tradesman to bribe him, and invited me home to his house to taste of his bribe wine. I never heard so much vanity from a man in my life. So being now weary of him, we parted, and I took coach and carried Creed to the Temple, there set him down, and to my office, where busy late, till my eyes begun to ache, and then home to supper. A pullet with good sauce, to my liking, and then to play on the flageolet with my wife, which she now does very prettily, and so to bed. The 31st of July. Up, and after some time with greeting upon my flageolet, I to the office and there all the morning busy. Among other things, Sir William Batten, William Penn, and myself did examine a fellow of our private man of war, who we have found come up from Hull with near £500 worth of pieces of eight, though he will confess but 100 pieces. But it appears that there have been fine doings there. At noon, dined at home, and then to the office, where busy again till the evening, when Major Halsey and Kynaston to adjust matters about Mistress Rumbold's bill of exchange. And here Major Halsey, speaking much of my doing business and understanding business, told me how my Lord General doth say that I'm worth them all, but I have heard that Halsey hath said the same behind my back to others. Then abroad with my wife by coach to Marylebone, where my Lord Mayor and Alderman, it seems, dined today and were just now going away, methought in a disconsolate condition compared with their splendour they formerly had when the city was standing. Here my wife and I drank at the gate, not lighting, and then home with much pleasure, and so to my chamber, and my wife and I to pipe, and so to supper and to bed. August 1667. The first. Up and all the morning at the office. At noon my wife and I dined at Sir William Penn's, only with Mistress Turner and her husband, on a damned venison pasty that stunk like a devil. However, I did not know it till dinner was done. We had nothing but only this and a leg of mutton and a pullet or two. Mistress Markham was here, with her great belly. I was very merry, and after dinner, upon a motion of the women, I was got to go to a play with them, the first I have seen since before the Dutch coming upon our coast, and so to the King's House to see the custom of the country. The house mighty empty, more than ever I saw it, and an ill play. After the play we into the house and spoke with Nip, who went abroad with us by coach to the neat houses in the way to Chelsea, and there in a box in a tree we sat and sang and talked and ate, my wife out of humour as she always is when this woman is by. So, after it was dark, we home, set Nip down at home, who told us the story how Nell is gone from the King's House, and is kept by my Lord Buckhurst. Then, we home, the gates of the city shut, it being so late, and at Newgate we find them in trouble, some thieves having this night broke open prison. So, we through, and home, and our coachman was fain to drive hard from two or three fellows, which he said were rogues, that he met at the end of Blowblather Street near Cheapside. So set Mistress Turner home, and then we home, and I to the office a little, and so home and to bed. My wife in an ill humour still. The 2nd of August. Up, but before I rose my wife fell into angry discourse of my kindness yesterday to Mistress Nip, and leading her and sitting in the coach hand in hand, and my arm about her middle, and in some bad words reproached me with it. I was troubled, but having much business in my head, and desirous of peace, rose and did not provoke her. So she up and came to me, and added more, and spoke basely of my father, who I perceived did do something in the country at her last being there, that did not like her, but I would not inquire into anything but let her talk. And when ready, away to the office I went, where all the morning I was, only Mr. Gordon come to me, and he and I home to my chamber, and there reckoned. And there I received my profits for Tangier of him, and £250 on my victualling score. He is a most noble-minded man as ever I met with, and seems to own himself much obliged to me, which I will labour to make him, for he is a good man also. We talked on many good things relating to the King's service, and in fine, I had much matter of joy by this morning's work, receiving above £400 of him on one account or other, and a promise that though I lay down my victualling place, yet as long as he continues victualler, I shall be the better by him. To the office again, and there evened all our business with Mr. Kynaston about Colonel Norwood's bill of exchange from Tangier, and am glad of it, for though he be a good man, yet his importunity tires me. So, home to dinner, where Mr. Hayter with me and Will Hewer, because of their being in the way after dinner, and so to the office after dinner, where, and with my Lord Brunker at his lodgings all the afternoon and evening, making up our great account for the Lords Commissioners of the Treasury, but not so as pleases me yet. So at 12 at night home to supper and to bed, my wife being gone in an ill humour to bed before me. This noon my wife comes to me alone, and tells me she had those upon her, and bid me remember it. I asked her why, and she said she had a reason. I do think by something, too, she said today, that she took notice that I had not lain with her this half year, that she thinks that I have some doubt that she might be with child by somebody else, which, God knows, never entered into my head, or whether my father observed anything at Brampton with Coleman I know not. But I do not do well to let these beginnings of discontents take so much root between us. The 3rd of August. Up and to the office, where very busy all the morning, then at noon to dinner and to the office again, there to enable myself, by finishing our general account, to go to the Lords Commissioners of the Treasury, which I did, and there was called in to them to tell them only the total of our debt of the Navy on the 25th of May last, which is above £950,000. Here I find them mighty hot in their answer to the Council Board about our treasurer's threepences of the victualling, and also against the present farm of the customs, which they do most highly inveigh against. So home again by coach, and there hard to work till very late, and my eyes begin to fail me, which now, upon every little overworking them, they do, which grieves me much. Late home to supper and to bed. The 4th of August, Lord's Day. Busy at my office from morning till night, in writing with my own hand, fair, our large general account of the expense and debt of the Navy, which lasted me till night to do that I was almost blind, and Mr. Gibson with me all day long, and dined with me, and excellent discourse I had with him, he understanding all the business of the Navy most admirably. To walk a little with my wife at night in the garden, it being very hot weather again, and so to supper and to bed. The 5th of August. Up and with Sir William Batten in the morning to St. James's, where we did our ordinary business with the Duke of York, where I perceive they have taken the highest resolution in the world to become good husbands, and to retrench all charge. And to that end we are commanded to give him an account of the establishment in the 7th year of the late King's reign, and how offices and salaries have been increased since. And I hope it will end in the taking away some of our commissioners, though it may be to the lessening of some of our salaries also. After done with the Duke of York and coming out through his dressing-room, I there espied Signor Francisco tuning his guitar, and Monsieur Dupuy with him, who did make him play to me, which he did most admirably, so well as I was mightily troubled that all that pains should have been taken upon so bad an instrument. Walked over the park with Mr. Gordon, and with him by coach home and thence to the Exchange, where I hear the ill news of our loss lately of 4 rich ships, 2 from Genoa, 1 from Gallipoli, all with rich oils, and the other from Barbados, worth, as is guessed, £80,000. But here is strong talk as if Harman had taken some of the Dutch East India ships, but I dare not yet believe it, and brought them into Lisbon. Home and dined with my wife at Sir William Penn's, where a very good pasty of venison, better than we expected, the last stinking basely. And after dinner he and my wife and I to the Duke of York's house, and there saw Love Tricks, or The School of Compliments, a silly play, only Mrs. Dancing in a shepherd's clothes did please us mightily. Thence, without much pleasure, home, and to my office, so home to supper and to bed. My wife mighty angry with Nell, who is turned a mere gossip and gads abroad as soon as our backs are turned, and will put her away tomorrow, which I'm not sorry for. The 6th of August. Up and to the office, where all the morning very full of business, a full board. Here, talking of news, my Lord Anglesey did tell us that the Dutch do make a further boggle with us, about two or three things, which they will be satisfied in, he says, by us easily. But only in one, it seems, they do demand that we shall not interrupt their East Indiamen coming home, and of which they are in some fear, and we are full of hopes that we have light upon some of them, and carried them into Lisbon by Harmon, which God send. But they, which doth show the low esteem they have of us, have the confidence to demand that we shall have a cessation on our parts, and yet they at liberty to take what they will, which is such an affront as another cannot be devised greater. At noon, home to dinner, where I find Mistress Wood, Bab Sheldon, and our mercer, who is dressed today in a paysan dress that looks mighty pretty. We dined and sang and laughed mighty merry, and then I to the office, only met at the door with Mistress Martin and Burrows, who I took in and drank with, but was afeard my wife should see them, they being, especially the first, a twattling gossip. And so, after drinking with them, parted, and I to the office, busy as long as my poor eyes would endure, which trouble me mightily, and then into the garden with my wife and to Sir William Batten's, with William Penn and John Minnis, and there ate a melon and talked, and so home to supper and to bed. My wife, as she said last night, hath put away Nell today for her gossiping abroad and telling of stories. Sir William Batten did tell me tonight that the council have ordered a hearing before them of carcasses business, which doth vex me mightily that we should be troubled so much by an idle rogue, a servant of our own, and all my thoughts tonight have been how to manage the matter before the council. The 7th of August. Up and at the office, very busy, and did much business all the morning. My wife abroad with her maid Jane, and Tom all the afternoon, being gone forth to eat some pasties at the Bottle of Hay in St. John Street, as you go to Islington, of which she is mighty fond. And I dined at home alone, and at the office close all the afternoon, doing much business to my great content. This afternoon Mr. Pierce, the surgeon, comes to me about business, and tells me that though the King and my Lady Castlemaine are friends again, she is not at Whitehall, but at Sir Daniel Harvey's, whither the King goes to her, and he says she made him ask her forgiveness upon his knees, and promised to offend her no more so. That, indeed, she did threaten to bring all his bastards to his closet door, and hath merely hectored him out of his wits. I at my office till night, and then home to my pipe, my wife not coming home, which vexed me. I then into the garden, and there walked alone in the garden, till 10 at night, when she came home, having been upon the water, and could not get home sooner. So to supper and to bed. The 8th of August. Up and all the morning at the office, where busy, and at noon home to dinner, and Creed dined with us, who tells me that Sir Henry Bellasis is dead of the duel he fought about 10 days ago with Tom Porter, and it is pretty to see how the world talk of them as a couple of fools that killed one another out of love. After dinner to the office a while, and then with my wife to the Temple, where I light, and sent her to the tailor's, I to my bookseller's, where by and by I met Mr. Evelyn, and talked of several things, but particularly of the times, and he tells me that wise men do prepare to remove abroad what they have, for that we must be ruined, our case being past relief. The kingdom so much in debt, and the king minding nothing but his lust, going 2 days a week to see my Lady Castlemaine at Sir Daniel Harvey's. He gone, I met with Mr. Moore, who tells me that my Lord Hinchingbroke is now with his mistress, but not that he is married, as Will Howe came and told us the other day. So by coach to Whitehall, and there stayed a little, thinking to see Sir George Carteret, but missed him. And so by coach, took up my wife, and so home and as far as Bow, where we stayed and drank, and there, passing by Mr. Lowther and his lady, they stopped, and we talked a little with them, they being in their gilt coach, and so parted. And presently came to us Mr. Andrews, whom I had not seen a good while, who, as other merchants do, doth all give over any hopes of things doing well, and so he spends his time here most, playing at bowls. After drinking together at the coach side, we with great pleasure home, and so to the office where I dispatched my business, and home to supper and to bed. The 9th of August. Up and betimes with Sir Hugh Cholmondeley upon some accounts of Tangier, and then he and I to Westminster to Mr. Burgess, and then walked in the hall, and he and I talked, and he doth really declare that he expects that of necessity this kingdom will fall back again to a commonwealth, and other wise men are of the same mind, this family doing all that silly men can do to make themselves unable to support their kingdom, minding their lust and their pleasure, and making their government so chargeable that people do well remember better things were done, and better managed, and with much less charge, under a commonwealth than they have been by this king, and doth seem to resolve to wind up his businesses, and get money in his hand against the turn doth come. After some talk, I by coach and there dined, and with us Mr. Batalier, by chance coming in to speak with me. And when I came home, I find Mr. Goodgroom, my wife's singing master, there. I did soundly rattle him for neglecting her so much as he hath done, she having not learned 3 songs these 3 months and more. After dinner, my wife abroad with Mistress Turner, and I to the office, where busy all the afternoon, and in the evening by coach to St. James's, and there met Sir William Coventry, and he and I walked in the park an hour, and then to his chamber, where he read to me the heads of the late great dispute between him and the rest of the commissioners of the Treasury, and our new Treasurer of the Navy, where they have overthrown him, the last Wednesday, in the great dispute touching his having the payment of the victualler, which is now settled by council that he is not to have it. And indeed they have been most just, as well as most severe and bold in the doing this against a man of his quality. But I perceive he doth really make no difference between any man. He tells me this day it is supposed the peace is ratified at Breda, and all that matter over. We did talk of many retrenchments of charge of the navy which he will put in practice, and everywhere else, though he tells me he despairs of being able to do what ought to be done for the saving of the kingdom, which I tell him, as indeed all the world is almost in hopes of, upon the proceeding of these gentlemen for the regulating of the treasury, it being so late, and our poverty grown so great, that they want where to set their feet to begin to do anything. He tells me how weary he hath for this year and a half been of the war, and how in the Duke of York's bedchamber at Christchurch at Oxford, when the court was there, he did labour to persuade the Duke to fling off the care of the navy, and get it committed to other hands, which, if he had done, would have been much to his honour, being just come home with so much honour from sea as he did. I took notice of the sharp letter he wrote, which he sent us to read yesterday, to Sir Edward Spragg, where he is very plain about his leaving his charge of the ships at Gravesend, when the enemy came last up, and several other things, a copy whereof I have kept. But it is done like a most worthy man, and he says it is good, now and then, to tell these gentlemen their duties, for they need it. And it seems, as he tells me, all our knights are fallen out one with another, he and Jennings, and Hollis, and, his words were, they are disputing which is the coward among them, and yet men that take the greatest liberty of censuring others. Here with him very late, till I could hardly get a coach or link willing to go through the ruins, but I do, but will not do it again, it being indeed very dangerous. So home, and to supper and bed, my head being full of an answer I have drawn this afternoon to the committee of the council, to whom Carcass's business is referred to be examined again. The 10th of August. Up into the office, and there finished the letter about Carcass, and sent it away, I think, well writ, though it troubles me we should be put to trouble by this rogue so much. At the office all the morning, and at noon home to dinner, where I sang and piped with my wife, with great pleasure, and did hire a coach to carry us to Barnet tomorrow. After dinner, I to the office, and there wrote as long as my eyes would give me leave, and then abroad, and to the new exchange to the booksellers there, where I hear of several new books coming out, Mr. Pratt's History of the Royal Society, and Mistress Philip's poems. Sir John Denham's poems are going to be all printed together, and among others, some new things, and among them he showed me a copy of verses of his, upon Sir John Minnis's going heretofore to Boulogne to eat a pig. Cowley, he tells me, is dead, who it seems was a mighty civil, serious man, which I did not know before. Several good plays are also likely to be abroad soon, as Mustapha and Henry V. Here, having stayed and divertised myself a good while, I home again and to finish my letters by the post, and so home, and betimes to bed with my wife, because of rising betimes tomorrow. The 11th of August, Lord's Day. Up by 4 o'clock and ready with Mistress Turner to take coach before 5, which we did, and set on our journey and got to the Wells at Barnet by 7 o'clock, and there found many people a-drinking. But the morning is a very cold morning, so as we were very cold all the way in the coach. Here we met Joseph Battalier, and I talked with him, and here was Will Hewers also, and his uncle Steventon. So after drinking 3 glasses, and the women nothing, we back by coach to Barnet, where to the Red Lion, where we light and went up into the great room, and there drank and ate some of the best cheesecakes that ever I ate in my life. And so took coach again, and Will Hewers on horseback with us, and so to Hatfield to the inn next my Lord Salisbury's house, and there we rested ourselves, and drank and bespoke dinner, and so to church, it being just church time, and there we find my Lord and my Lady Sands, and several fine ladies of the family, and a great many handsome faces and gentle persons more in the church, and did hear a most excellent good sermon, which pleased me mightily, and very devout, it being upon the signs of saving grace where it is in a man, and one sign, which held him all this day, was that where that grace was, there is also the grace of prayer, which he did handle very finely. In this church lies the former Lord of Salisbury, Cecil, buried in a noble tomb. So the church being done, we to our inn, and there dined very well and mighty merry. And as soon as had dined, we walked out into the park through the fine walk of trees into the vineyard, and there showed them that, which is in good order, and indeed a place of great delight, which, together with our fine walk through the park, was of as much pleasure as could be desired in the world for country pleasure and good air. Being come back and weary with the walk, for as I made it, it was pretty long, being come back to our inn, there the women had pleasure in putting on some straw hats, which are much worn in this country, and did become them mightily, but especially my wife. So, after resting a while, we took coach again and back to Barnet, where Will Hewers took us into his lodging, which is very handsome, and there did treat us very highly with cheesecakes, cream, tarts, and other good things, and then walked into the garden, which was pretty, and there filled my pockets full of filberts. And so, with much pleasure, among other things, I met in this house with a printed book of the life of Oliver Cromwell, to his honour as a soldier and politician, though as a rebel, the first of that kind that ever I saw, and it is well done. Took coach again, and got home with great content, just at day shutting in. And so as soon as home, ate a little, and then to bed with exceeding great content at our day's work. The 12th of August. My wife waked betimes to call up her people to washing, and so to bed again, whom I then hugged, it being cold now in the mornings, and then did la otra cosa con her, which I had not done con ella for these 3 meses past, which I do believe is a great matter towards the making her of late so indifferent towards me, and with good reason. But now she had much pleasure, and so to sleep again. Up by and by, and I with Mr. Gordon by coach to St. James's, where we find the Duke gone a-hunting with the King, but found Sir William Coventry within, with whom we discoursed, and he did largely discourse with us, about our speedy falling upon considering of retrenchments in the expense of the Navy, which I will put forward as much as I can. So, having done there, I to Westminster to Burgess, and then walked to the New Exchange, and there to my bookseller's there, and did buy Scott's Discourse of Witches, and do hear Mr. Cowley mightily lamented his death by Dr. Ward, the Bishop of Winchester, and Dr. Bates, who were standing there, as the best poet of our nation, and as good a man. Thence I to the print sellers over against the Exchange towards Covent Garden, and there bought a few more prints of cities, and so home with them, and my wife and maids being gone over the water to the Whitesters with their clothes, this being the first time of her trying this way of washing her linen, I dined at Sir William Batten's, and after dinner all alone to the King's Playhouse, and there did happen to sit just before Mistress Pierce and Mistress Nip, who pulled me by the hair, and so I addressed myself to them and talked to them all the intervals of the play, and did give them fruit. The play is Brennerout, which I do find but little in for my part. Here was many fine ladies, among others the German baron with his lady, who is envoy from the emperor, and their fine daughter, which hath travelled all Europe over with them, it seems, and is accordingly accomplished, and indeed is a wonderful pretty woman. Here Sir Philip Froude, who sat next to me, did tell me how Sir Henry Bellasis is dead, and that the quarrel between him and Tom Porter, who is fled, did arise in the ridiculous fashion that I was first told it, which is a strange thing between two so good friends. The play being done, I took the women and Mistress Corbett, who was with them, by coach, it raining, to Mistress Manuel's, the Jew's wife, formerly a player, who we heard sing with one of the Italians that was there, and indeed she sings mighty well, and just after the Italian manner, but yet doth not please me like one of Mistress Nip's songs to a good English tune, the manner of their air not pleasing me so well as the fashion of our own, nor so natural. Here I sat a little and then left them, and then by coach home, where my wife not come home. So to the office a little and then home, and my wife came, and so saying nothing where I had been, we to supper and pipe, and so to bed. The 13th of August. Up and to the office, where we sat busy all the morning. At noon, home to dinner all alone, my wife being again at the Whitster's. After dinner, I with Sir William Penn to St. James's, where the rest came and attended the Duke of York with our usual business, who, upon occasion, told us that he did expect this night or tomorrow to hear from Breda of the consummation of the peace. Thence Sir William Penn and I to the King's House, and there saw the committee, which I went to with some prejudice, not liking it before, but I do now find it a very good play, and a great deal of good invention in it. But Lacy's part is so well performed that it would set off anything. The play being done, we with great pleasure home, and there I to the office to finish my letters, and then home to my chamber to sing and pipe, till my wife comes home from her washing, which was 9 at night, and a dark and rainy night, that I was troubled at her staying out so long. But she came well home, and so to supper and to bed. The 14th of August. Up and to the office, where we hold a meeting extraordinary, upon some particular businesses, and there sat all the morning. At noon, my wife being gone to the Whitster's again to her clothes, I to dinner to Sir William Batten, where much of our discourse touching Carcass, who, it seems, doth find success before the council, and doth everywhere threaten us with what he will prove against us, which doth vex us, to see that we must be subjected to such a rogue of our own servants as this is. By and by to talk of our prize at Hull, and Sir William Batten offering again and again seriously how he would sell his part for £1,000, and I considering the knavery of Hogg and his company, the trouble we may have with the Prince Rupert about the consortship, and how we are linked with Sir Richard Ford, whose son-in-law too is got thither, and there we entrust him with all our concerns, who, I doubt, is of the same breed with his father-in-law for a knave, and then the danger of the sea if it shall be brought about, or bad debts contracted in the sale, but chiefly to be eased of my fears about all, or any of this, I did offer my part to him for £700. With a little beating the bargain, we come to a perfect agreement for £666, 13 shillings and 4 pence, which is 2/3 of £1,000, which is my proportion of the prize. I went to my office full of doubts and joy concerning what I had done, but, however, did put into writing the heads of our agreement and returned to Sir William Batten, and we both signed them, and Sir Richard Ford, being come thither since, witnessed them. So having put it past further dispute, I away satisfied, and took coach into the King's Playhouse, and there saw The Country Captain, which is a very ordinary play, methinks. I had no pleasure therein at all. And so home again, and to my business hard, till my wife came home from her clothes, and so with her to supper and to bed. No news yet come of the ratification of the peace, which we have expected now every hour since yesterday. The 15th of August. Up into the office betimes, where busy and sat all the morning, vexed with more news of Carcass's proceedings at the council, insomuch as we four, John Minnis, William Batten, William Penn, and myself, did make an appointment to dine with Sir William Coventry today to discourse it with him, which we did by going thither as soon as the office was up, and there dined, and very merry, and many good stories. And after dinner to our discourse about Carcass, and how much we are troubled that we should be brought, as they say we shall, to defend our report before the council board with him, and to have a clerk imposed on us. He tells us, in short, that there is no intention in the Lords for the latter, but wholly the contrary, that they do not desire neither to do anything in disrespect to the board, and he will endeavour to prevent, as he hath done, our coming to plead at the table with our clerk, and doth believe the whole will amount to nothing at the council, only what he shall declare in behalf of the king against the office, if he offers anything, will and ought to be received, to which we all show a readiness, though I confess even that, though I think I'm as clear as the clearest of them, yet I am troubled to think what trouble a rogue may without cause give a man, though it be only by bespattering a man. And therefore could wish that over, though I fear nothing to be proved. Thence, with much satisfaction, and Sir William Penn and I to the Duke's house, where a new play, the King and Court there, the house full, and an act begun. And so we went to the King's, and there saw The Merry Wives of Windsor, which did not please me at all, in no part of it. And so, after the play done, we to the Duke's house, where my wife was by appointment in Sir William Penn's coach, and she home, and we home, and I to my office, where busy till letters done, and then home to supper and to bed. The 16th of August. Up and at the office all the morning, and so at noon to dinner, and after dinner my wife and I to the Duke's Playhouse, where we saw the new play acted yesterday, The Feign Innocence, or Sir Martin Marall, a play made by my Lord Duke of Newcastle, but, as everybody says, corrected by Dryden. It is the most entire piece of mirth, a complete farce from one end to the other, that certainly was ever writ. I never laughed so in all my life. I laughed till my head ached all the evening and night with my laughing, and at very good wit therein, not fooling. The house full, and in all things of mighty content to me. Thence to the New Exchange with my wife, where at my bookseller's I saw The History of the Royal Society, which I believe is a fine book, and I have bespoke one in choirs. So home, and I to the office a little, and so to my chamber and read The History of 88 in speed, in order to my seeing the play thereof acted tomorrow at the King's House. So to supper in some pain, by the sudden change of the weather cold, and my drinking of cold drink, which I must, I fear, begin to leave off, though I shall try it as long as I can without much pain. But I find myself to be full of wind, and my anus to be knit together, as it is always with cold. Everybody wonders that we have no news from Breda of the ratification of the peace, and do suspect that there is some stop in it. So to bed. The 17th of August. Up and all the morning at the office where we sat, and my head was full of the business of Carcass, who hath a hearing this morning before the council, and hath summoned at least 30 persons, and, which is wondrous, a great many of them, I hear, do declare more against him than for him, and yet he summons people without distinction, sure he is distracted. At noon, home to dinner, and presently my wife and I and Sir William Penn to the King's Playhouse, where the house extraordinary full. And there was the King and Duke of York to see the new play, Queen Elizabeth's Troubles and the History of 88. I confess I have sucked in so much of the sad story of Queen Elizabeth from my cradle that I was ready to weep for her sometimes. But the play is the most ridiculous that Shaw ever came upon stage, and indeed is merely a show, only shows the true garb of the queens in those days, just as we see Queen Mary and Queen Elizabeth painted. But the play is merely a puppet play acted by living puppets. Neither the design nor language better, and one stands by and tells us the meaning of things. Only I was pleased to see Nip dance among the milkmaids, and to hear her sing a song to Queen Elizabeth, and to see her come out in her nightgown with no locks on, but her bare face and hair only tied up in a knot behind, which is the comeliest dress that ever I saw her in to her advantage. Thence home, and went as far as Mile End with Sir William Penn, whose coach took him up there for his country house, and after having drunk there at the Rose and Crown, a good house for Alderman Bide's ale, we parted, and we home, and there I finished my letters, and then home to supper and to bed. The 18th of August, Lord's Day. Up and being ready, walked up and down into the streets to Creed Church, to see it how it is, but I find no alteration there, as they say there was, for my Lord Mayor and Alderman to come to sermon, as they do every Sunday, as they did formerly to Paul's. Walk back home and to our own church, where a dull sermon, and our church empty of the best sort of people, they being at their country houses. And so home, and there dined with me Mr. Turner and his daughter Betty. Her mother should, but they were invited to Sir John Minnis's, where she dined, and the others here with me. Betty is grown a fine lady as to carriage and discourse. I and my wife are mightily pleased with her. We had a good haunch of venison, powdered and boiled, and a good dinner and merry. After dinner comes Mr. Pelling, the apothecary, whom I had sent for to dine with me, but he was engaged. After sitting an hour to talk, we broke up, all leaving Pelling to talk with my wife, and I walked toward Whitehall, but being weary, turned into St. Dunstan's Church, where I hear an able sermon of the minister of the place, and stood by a pretty modest maid, whom I did labour to take by the hand and the body, but she would not, but got further and further from me, and at last I could perceive her to take pins out of her pocket to prick me if I should touch her again, which seeing, I did forbear, and was glad I did espy her design. And then I fell to gaze upon another pretty maid, in a pew close to me, and she on me, and I did go about to take her by the hand, which she suffered a little and then withdrew. So the sermon ended, and the church broke up, and my amours ended also. And so took coach and home, and there took up my wife, and to Islington with her, our old road, but before we got to Islington, between that and Kingsland, there happened an odd adventure. One of our coach horses fell sick of the staggers, so as he was ready to fall down. The coachman was fain to light and hold him up and cut his tongue to make him bleed, and his tail. The horse continued shaking every part of him, as if he had been in an ague a good while, and his blood settled in his tongue, and the coachman thought and believed he would presently drop down dead. Then he blew some tobacco in his nose, upon which the horse sneezed, and by and by grows well and draws us the rest of our way as well as ever he did, which was one of the strangest things of a horse I ever observed. But he says it is usual. It is the staggers. Stayed and ate and drank at Islington at the old house, and so home and to my chamber to read, and then to supper and to bed. The 19th of August. Up and at the office all the morning, very busy. Towards noon I to Westminster about some tallies at the Exchequer, and then straight home again and dined, and then to sing with my wife with great content, and then I to the office again where busy, and then out and took coach into the Duke of York's house all alone, and there saw Sir Martin Marr all again, though I saw him but 2 days since, and do find it the most comical play that ever I saw in my life. As soon as the play done, I home and there busy till night, and then comes Mr. Moore to me, only to discourse with me about some general things touching the badness of the times, how ill they look, and how he doth agree with most people that I meet with, that we shall fall into a commonwealth in a few years, whether we will or no, For the charge of a monarchy is such as the kingdom cannot be brought to bear willingly, nor are things managed so well nowadays under it as was heretofore. He says everybody doth think that there is something extraordinary that keeps us so long from the news of the peace being ratified, which the King and the Duke of York have expected these 6 days. He gone, my wife and I and Mistress Turner walked in the garden a good while, till 9 at night, and then parted, and I home to supper and to read a little, which I cannot refrain, though I have all the reason in the world to favour my eyes, which every day grow worse and worse by overusing them, and then to bed. The 20th of August. Up and to my chamber to set down my journal for the last 3 days, and then to the office, where busy all the morning. At noon, home to dinner, and then with my wife abroad. Set her down at the Exchange, and I to St. James's, where find Sir William Coventry alone, and fell to discourse of retrenchments. And thereon he tells how he hath already propounded to the Lords Committee of the Council, how he would have the Treasurer of the Navy a less man, that might not sit at the board, but be subject to the board. He would have 2 controllers to do his work, and 2 surveyors, whereof one of each to take it by turns to reside at Portsmouth and Chatham, by a kind of rotation. He would have but only 1 clerk of the Acts. He doth tell me he hath propounded how the charge of the Navy in peace shall come within £200,000, by keeping out 24 ships in summer, and 10 in the winter. And several other particulars we went over of retrenchment, and I find I must provide some things to offer, that I may be found studious to lessen the King's charge. By and by comes my Lord Brunker, and then we up to the Duke of York, and there had a hearing of our usual businesses, but no money to be heard of, no, not £100 upon the most pressing service that can be imagined, of bringing in the King's timber from Whittlewood, while we have the utmost want of it, and no credit to provide it elsewhere. And as soon as we had done with the Duke of York, Sir William Coventry did single Sir William Penn and me, and desired us to lend the King some money out of the prizes we have taken by hog. He did not much press it, and we made but a merry answer thereto, but I perceive he did ask it seriously, and did tell us that there never was so much need of it in the world as now, being brought to lowest straits that can be in the world. This troubled me much. By and by Sir William Batten told me that he heard how Carcass doth now give out that he will hang me, among the rest of his threats of him and Penn, which is the first word I ever heard of that kind from him concerning me. It doth trouble me a little, though I know nothing he can possibly find to fasten on me. Thence with my Lord Brunker to the Duke's playhouse, telling my wife so at the Change where I left her, and there saw Sir Martin Marr all again, which I have now seen 3 times, and it hath been acted but 4 times, and still find it a very ingenious play, and full of variety. So home and to the office, where my eyes would not suffer me to do anything by candlelight, and so called my wife and walked in the garden, she mighty pressing for a new pair of cuffs, which I am against the laying out of money upon yet, which makes her angry. So home to supper and to bed. The 21st of August. Up, and my wife and I fell out about the pair of cuffs, which she hath a mind to have, to go to see the ladies dancing tomorrow at Betty Turner's school tomorrow, and doth vex me so that I'm resolved to deny them her. However, by and by a way was found that she had them, and I well satisfied, being unwilling to let our difference grow higher upon so small an occasion and frowardness of mine. Then to the office, my Lord Brunker and I all the morning answering petitions, which now by the King and Council's order we are commanded to set a day in a week apart for. And we resolve to do it by turns, my Lord and I 1 week, and 2 others another. At noon home to dinner, and then my wife and I mighty pleasant abroad, she to the new Exchange, and I to the Commissioners of the Treasury, who do sit very close, and are bringing the King's charge as low as they can. But Sir William Coventry did here again tell me that he is very serious in what he said to Sir William Penn and me yesterday about our lending of money to the King, and says that people do talk that we had had the King's ship at his cost to take prizes, and that we ought to lend the king money more than other people. I did tell him I will consider it, and so parted, and do find I cannot avoid it. So to Westminster Hall, and there stayed a while, and thence to Mistress Martin's, and there did take a little pleasure, both with her and her sister. Here sat and talked, and it is a strange thing to see the impudence of the woman, that desires by all means to have her marido come home, only that she might be at liberty to have me para tocar her, which is a thing I do not so much desire. Thence by coach took up my wife and home, and out to Mile End, and there drank, and so home, and after some little reading in my chamber, to supper, and to bed. This day I sent my cousin Roger a tierce of claret, which I gave him. This morning came two of Captain Cook's boys, whose voices are broke and are gone from the chapel, but have extraordinary skill, and they, and my boy with his broken voice, did sing three parts. Their names were Blow and Loggins. But notwithstanding their skill, yet to hear them sing with their broken voices, which they could not command to keep in tune, would make a man mad, so bad it was. The 22nd of August. Up and to the office whence Lord Brunker, John Minnis, William Penn and I went to examine some men that are put in there for rescuing of men that were pressed into the service, and we do plainly see that the desperate condition that we put men into for want of their pay makes them mad, they being as good men as ever were in the world, and would as readily serve the king again were they but paid. Two men leapt overboard, among others, into the Thames out of the vessel into which they were pressed, and were shot by the soldiers placed there to keep them, 2 days since. So much people do avoid the king's service. And then these men are pressed without money, and so we cannot punish them for anything, so that we are forced only to make a show of severity by keeping them in prison, but are unable to punish them. Returning to the office, did ask whether we might visit Commissioner Pett, to which I confess I have no great mind, and it was answered that he was close prisoner and we could not, but the lieutenant of the Tower would send for him to his lodgings if we would, so we put it off to another time. Returned to the office where we sat all the morning, and at noon I to Captain Cox to dinner, where Lord Brunker and his lady, Matthew Wren, and Bull Teal and Sir Alan Apsley, the last of which did make good sport, he being already fallen under the retrenchments of the new committee, as he is Master Faulkner, which makes him mad, and swears that we are doing that the Parliament would have done, that is, that we are now endeavouring to destroy one another. But it was well observed by some at the table, that they do not think this retrenching of the King's charge will be so acceptable to the Parliament, they having given the king a revenue of so many hundred thousands of pounds a year more than his predecessors had, that he might live in pomp like a king. After dinner with my Lord Brunker and his mistress to the king's playhouse, and there saw the Indian Emperor, where I find Nell come again, which I am glad of, but was most infinitely displeased with her being put to act the Emperor's daughter, which is a great and serious part, which she doth most basely. The rest of the play, though pretty good, was not well acted by most of them, methought, so that I took no great content in it. But that troubled me most was that Nip sent by Mal to desire to speak with me after the play, and she beckoned to me at the end of the play, and I promised to come. But it was so late, and I forced a step to Mistress William's lodgings with my lord and her, where I did not stay, however, for fear of her showing me her closet, and thereby forcing me to give her something, and it was so late that for fear of my wife's coming home before me, I was forced to go straight home, which troubled me. Home and to the office a little, and then home and to my chamber to read, and anon, late, comes home my wife with Mr. Turner and Mistress Turner, with whom she supped, having been with Mistress Turner today at her daughter's school, to see her daughter's dancing and the rest, which she says is fine. They gone, I to supper and to bed. My wife very fine today in her new suit of laced cuffs and perquisites. This evening Pelling came to me, and tells me that this night the Dutch letters are come, and that the peace was proclaimed there the 19th instant, and that all is finished, which for my life I know not whether to be glad or sorry for, a peace being so necessary, and yet the peace is so bad in its terms. The 23rd of August. Up and greeting comes, who brings me a tune for two flageolets, which we played, and is a tune played at the King's Playhouse, which goes so well that I will have more of them, and it will be a mighty pleasure for me to have my wife able to play a part with me, which she will easily, I find, do. Then abroad to Whitehall in a hackney coach with Sir William Penn, and in our way in the narrow street near Paul's, going the back way by Tower Street, and the coach being forced to put back, he was turning himself into a cellar, which made people cry out to us, and so we were forced to leap out, he out of one, and I out of the other boat. Question, whether a glass coach would have permitted us to have made that escape? Neither of us getting any hurt, nor could the coach have got much hurt had we been in it, but, however, there was cause enough for us two to do what we could to save ourselves. So, being all dusty, we put into the Castle Tavern by the Savoy, and there brushed ourselves, and then to Whitehall with our fellows to attend the council by order, upon some propositions of my Lord Anglesey. We were called in, the King there, and it was about considering how the fleet might be discharged at their coming in shortly, the peace being now ratified and takes place on Monday next, which Sir William Coventry said would make some clashing between some of us, 20-1, for want of more warning, but the wind hath kept back the boats from coming over, whether by money or ticket, and cries out against tickets. But the matter was referred for us to provide an answer to, which we must do in a few days. And so we parted, and I to Westminster to the Exchequer to see what sums of money other people lend upon the act, and find of all sizes from £1,000 to £100, nay to £50, nay to £20, nay to £5, for I find that one Dr. Reed, Doctor of Law, gives no more, and others of them £20, which is a poor thing, methinks, that we should stoop so low as to borrow such sums. Upon the whole, I do think to lend, since I must lend, £300, though God knows it is much against my will to lend any, unless things were in better condition and like to continue so. Thence home and there to dinner, and after dinner by coach out again, setting my wife down at Unthanks, and I to the Treasury Chamber, where I waited talking with Sir George Downing till the Lords met. He tells me how he will make all the Exchequer officers, of one side and t'other, to lend the King money upon the act, and that the least clerk shall lend money, and he believes the least will £100, but this I do not believe. He made me almost ashamed that we of the Navy had not in all this time lent any, so that I find it necessary I should, and so will speedily do it before any of my fellows begin and lead me to a bigger sum. By and by the Lords came, and I perceive Sir William Coventry is the man, and nothing done till he comes. Among other things, I hear him observe, looking over a paper, that Sir John Shaw is a miracle of a man, for he thinks he executes more places than any man in England, for there he finds him a surveyor of some of the King's woods, and so reckoned up many other places, the most inconsistent in the world. Their business with me was to consider how to assign such of our commanders as will take assignments upon the act for their wages, and the consideration thereof was referred to me to give them an answer the next sitting, which is a horrid poor thing, but they scruple at nothing of honour in the case. So away thence, and called my wife, and to the King's House and saw the Maiden Queen, which pleases us mightily, and then away and took up Mistress Turner at her door, and so to Mile End, and there drank, and so back to her house, it being a fine evening, and there supped. The first time I ever was there since they lived there, and she hath all things so neat and well done, that I'm mightily pleased with her, and all she doth. So here, very merry, and then home, and to bed, my eyes being very bad. I find most people pleased with their being at ease and safe, of a piece, that they may know no more charge or hazard of an ill-managed war, but nobody speaking of the peace with any content or pleasure, but are silent in it, as of a thing they are ashamed of. No, not at court, much less in the city.